Tango Tango Papa 2028, December 9th, 2018.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Milldale, Connecticut. So, how long has it been since the last podcast? The last one was on 11/23. So, I don't know, maybe about 3 weeks ago, something like that. Yeah, or less than that, actually. So that's not too bad. I've been wanting to do a podcast, but I ended up with what I think was a cold and several days ago, and it's, I don't know, it's mostly gone away, but, and I've been afraid that if I start talking, I'd start coughing, and, you know, so it seems to be a little bit better today. As far as the coughing goes. So, or, you know, let's just hope. Hope that I don't, and if I do, I'll just have to probably spend some time editing the coughs out if I start hacking. So, apologies in advance if that happens. So, anyway, you know, typical work stuff. I was down in Florida, and then so now I'm right now I'm in Connecticut, and as I'm on my way to deliver tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. at Chicopee, I believe that's how it's pronounced, Massachusetts, which is about excuse me, about 57 miles from here or so. The truck stops in this part of the country are kind of, they tend to be sort of few and far between up here in the Northeast, and so there's a truck stop here at, you know, there's a TA truck stop that's at Milldale, Connecticut, or Southington, Connecticut. I'm not sure which, you know, there's two little towns that are together. Excuse me, it started, I think. But in any case, that TA truck stop was, the parking lot looked pretty well full, and they charge for the parking lot. It's free on the weekends, but as Sunday night, they start charging. And so not only do they charge for the parking lot, then they have some reserved, quote-unquote, parking spaces in the truck stop or in the parking lot that you have to pay for. And so in essence, they're sort of double-dipping for those so-called reserved spots. So what I did, and I've done it before, I stopped at the truck stop and I got something to eat, and then I immediately left the truck stop, and less than 2 miles there is a rest area. And so it was still daylight. It was probably about 4 o'clock this afternoon, 3:30, 4 o'clock. So I came to the, you know, after I got the food, I immediately came to the rest area, which already has quite a few trucks parked in it. Found a place to park, and so I'm spending the break here. So, but it's kind of a problem trying to find a place to park in this part of the world. And, of course, the receiver, my instructions say specifically they don't allow any kind of parking at the receiver. And so I'll try to arrive there. I'll leave here in time to arrive there about roughly an hour before the 11 a.m. appointment time. And then that will be... you know, that'll be that. So, You know, but, you know, so I didn't have to worry about trying to park in the truck stop and pay. I don't know if all of the paid spaces may have already been taken up. Because, as I say, they charge to park in the regular part of the parking lot, and then they have these reserved spots that allow them to double dip. So, you know, if you're lucky enough to just be able to park in the paid part of the parking lot, fine. But, good luck. If all of those spots are taken, the parking lot's pretty crowded as it is, and because they're trying to cram as much in there as possible. And then, so then if you want to get in one of those reserve spots, well, you got to pay for that on top of what you're paying to park there already. So it doesn't seem like a very friendly customer-friendly way of doing business. They seem to get away with it. They've been doing it for a while, and so it doesn't seem to have hurt their business at all. They've got plenty of business, but it kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth, you know, the idea that they can double dip that way. But that's what they're doing, and they're not the only truck stops that do that. That there aren't that many truck stops anymore that have, you know, where they charge for the whole parking lot. There are a few of them here and there. It's a, you know, you have to get in, you know, like really, you know, parts of the country where there's lots of trucks and not enough parking for them, in order for them to, a truck stop to be able to get away with that. Because otherwise, if they try to charge, in most other places, if they try to charge for their parking, then it just ends up chasing customers away. But now, what about most all of the truck stops are doing now, they have their regular parking, but then they have their so-called reserved parking, and so in some cases you have to pay for the reserved parking spot. I will do that on occasion, but only if it's a kind of a last resort. And I didn't need to this evening because I was able to just get the food and then come to this rest area. And as I say, I'll just hang out here until the appropriate time in the morning, and I'll leave here, and that'll allow myself enough time to get to the receiver at Chicopee, Massachusetts by 11 a.m. or probably 10 a.m. actually, so, you know, hour before the appointment. And that way, if there's any kind of traffic problems or whatever, then I still have time to, there's a fudge factor there that remains. So what's been going on since the last podcast? I was at home. I don't know if I don't remember exactly when I came back to work, and I don't remember if I talked about it or not. I bought a, and I may have already talked about it, I can't remember. I bought a keyboard. It's kind of a Bluetooth keyboard touchpad type device for this Surface Pro 3 that I have. The name of it is, or the brand name is BRYDGE Bridge. And as I say, if I've already talked about this, then you know all about it. But in any case, I bought this. It's a keyboard and a touchpad. But what it does, it has clips that allow you to slide the tablet, because that's what a Surface Pro 3 is a tablet. It allows you to slide that into the these clips. And then the clips are fairly, you know, on kind of semi-rigid hinges, which allow you to, you know, kind of open and fold open and fold close it just like it would be a laptop. So it sort of turns the Surface Pro 3 tablet. And it would, you know, it would also work like they have versions for iPads as well. Sort of turns it into a device that's very sort of a laptop-friendly type device. So, because if you have like the typical, like the Surface Pro 3 with the Surface, or any Surface Pro with the the foldable keyboard cover, or even an iPad cover for that matter, if you're using an iPad in that way, those work fine on a flat table, like a flat surface tabletop, but or desktop. But if you try to use something like that in your lap, it doesn't work very well. If it's the, it just won't balance properly. But being that this is, it kind of turns it into sort of a quasi laptop type thing, where it just kind of stays put. You open it up to the angle that you want, and it just sits there. That really works well. So I'm pretty well pleased. I paid $129 for this at my local Best Buy store. They had it in stock, and I've been extremely pleased with it. You do have to charge it occasionally, but it's got a large enough battery that they say you can, you might not have to charge it, like every 3 months or so. And so I charged it up initially when I got it, and then I've used it, I've been using the machine or the combination since then, and I haven't charged it a bit, and it's of course it continues to work, and so I don't bother turning it on or off. It automatically sort of senses when sort of puts itself to sleep, and so whenever I turn the Surface Pro 3 off, it seems to just go to sleep, and then whenever I turn the Surface Pro 3 back on, then it pairs back up with it, and automatically, and I'm back in business. And it just, the combination simply works, and it's not a bad typing experience. Even though these are sort of chiclet-style keys, it's a much better typing experience than the typical keypad kind of experience. So this would be probably more comparable to, one of the modern MacBooks, that type of keyboard. But this is actually a nice kind of, it's pretty easy to type on. Now, of course, the best typing, the best typing experience of all is the old IBM type keyboards with so-called buckling spring, and those, I've probably mentioned it before, those are still available. You can still buy those brand new. I think the name of the company that bought, and it sort of spun off from IBM is Unicomp is the name of it. They have a website. They'll make Mac versions of the keyboard. They've got various Windows versions of the keyboard. USB. These are all USB. I don't know if I'm not sure if they've ever done Bluetooth, but they're USB keyboards. Because the original IBM keyboards, of course, were the PS2 style. The little round connector that had the pins in it. Which you can also, if you've got one of those, you can buy a PS2 to USB adapter and still utilize that. Those are, if you've got one of those old PS2 IBM keyboards, those are still just as usable as ever. But the buckling spring keyboard is in my opinion, is the best keyboard ever made as far as being able to. My typing accuracy really increases dramatically on that style of keyboard, probably even better than it would with this so-called bridge keyboard that I have right now. So if you're going to do very much typing and you're familiar with those old IBM buckling spring keyboards, as I say, they're still available. Unicomp is the name. You can look them up. Just type Unicomp into YouTube, and you're going to find all kinds of videos where people are sort of demonstrating those and talking about the product. So, did that. What else has been going on? So, one of the other things that I did, when I was at home the last time, and I don't know if I can't remember when I did, you know, what day if I'd already came back to work when I did the last podcast and what I talked about, but, if I talked about this, I'm talking about it again. And if I haven't, then I haven't. But when I was home, I ended up talking to my middle brother, the one that's 5.5 years younger than I am. I have two younger brothers. I'm the oldest. I'm 63. I have, the middle brother is 5.5 years younger than I am, and then the youngest one is 12.5 years younger than I am. So we're kind of spread out. I talked to the middle one, and he mentioned that he had a quote-unquote sugar problem, and I don't know that he had ever mentioned that to me before or not. I don't, or at least my mom hadn't mentioned it. She might have mentioned it, if she did, I didn't remember it. But in any case, that's really the first that I'd kind of, at least where it registered that he had that he was on, basically a type 2 diabetic medication. So he said he's taking metformin. So, that's actually kind of a serious thing. So what I ended up doing, I watched tons and tons of YouTube videos. So, and of course there's lots of diabetic type videos on YouTube, and it's an interesting topic. Excuse me again. So I ended up coming across these, a bunch of these videos where they're talking about reducing or even being able to cure type 2 diabetes, and they're doing that in conjunction with something called a keto diet. Now, I had heard that term, because it's kind of recently become popular, sort of the ketogenic diet, and you'll hear positive things about it. It's kind of sweeping, sort of like a fad type diet, but you hear that term, and then you'll see articles periodically saying that, ketogenic diet is dangerous, it's bad for you, etc., etc. So, I've watched a ton of these videos at this point, kind of explaining what the diet is, how it works, and how it can be good for you, even if you don't have type 2 diabetes. Now, a lot of people around the world, and certainly in the United States, 52% of people in the U.S. right now either have type 2 diabetes or they have so-called pre-diabetes, which pre-diabetes is, sort of insulin resistance, and then if that goes unchecked, then it progresses into type 2 diabetes, and then, if that keeps going on, then if that keeps progressing, that can even progress to the point where, people actually have to start taking insulin. Then they sort of convert into a type 1 diabetic situation. Of course, type 1 diabetes is, that happens usually from, like young childhood, where they, their insulin, their pancreas produces zero insulin at all, and so then therefore they have to give them kind of artificially generated insulin, whatever amount they have to give them artificially generated insulin, otherwise they die without it. Now, type 2 diabetic is kind of a different thing altogether. It's still, so the way I understand it, the diet that, the typical American diet, what they call the standard American diet, or the S, you abbreviate that SAD for sad American diet, And it actually kind of is a fitting acronym, a fitting abbreviation, because the typical diet, what do we have? We've got breads, we've got pastas, we've got rice, got all kinds of cakes and cookies and candies and juices, and they tell you, oh, you need to eat all these fruits, they're so healthy for you, they're so good for you. And stay away from fats. Fats are bad. Fats are going to kill you. Fats are going to cause you to have a heart attack. And so they've been telling this, the American public, that for a good 50 years at this point. They probably really started that in the 1960s. They really, pushed the idea that, that you should eat all these carbohydrates and stay away from the fats. And the truth is exactly the opposite, because what has happened on that, on that diet, on that dietary recommendation? People are eating all kinds of sugars and cakes and cookies and candies and potatoes and rice and bread and pasta, fruit, and what happens? You eat that stuff, it all turns into sugar. As soon as it hits your bloodstream, your body converts every bit of that stuff into sugar. Now, the typical, stop and think about this. The typical healthy person has a sugar, like 5 grams of sugar in their bloodstream. That's a normal level. That's like a teaspoon of sugar is what the human body normally, that's a normal blood level. You have 1 teaspoon of sugar circulating in your blood if you're perfectly healthy and normal and you don't have any kind of diabetic or sugar problem. Got 1 teaspoon of sugar circulating around in your entire bloodstream. And yet they're saying, well, you need to eat 40 grams of this or 50 grams, 50 grams of that, depending on the dietary recommendation. Let's say they're saying you need to eat at least 50 grams of carbohydrates a day. Well, that's, how many teaspoons extra of sugar? And so that's insane. If you've got 5 grams of sugar, 1 teaspoon of sugar that's your body just normally regulates in your bloodstream that's kind of floating around in your blood, and then on top of that they're telling you, oh, you need to eat all these extra teaspoons of sugar, and that's, people eat a lot more than that typically in a day. I know I did, and because it's no secret that I love pasta, and I shudder to think how many carbohydrates, because that's all carbohydrates. You have a big bowl of pasta, that's all carbohydrates. Soon as your body, as soon as your body metabolizes it, it's sugar. It's the same stuff. You might as well just be eating sugar cubes. Or if you eat a slice of bread, or several slices of bread. Or a big thing of rice. Or the so-called healthy fruit. Sugar, sugar, sugar. And then people, I have to have my sweet tea. You go in a lot of these restaurants and they have, do you want tea? Sweet or unsweet? That used just to be a thing that was in the South. That, sweet or unsweet tea. Now it's popped up everywhere. Or in a lot of the restaurants. It's not everywhere, but it's in a lot of them all over the country. And they put as much sugar, it seems they put as much sugar in that tea as it'll, and then they'll heat it up so that it'll even take more. It's kind of ridiculous. And then plus all of the soft drinks. Sugar, sugar, sugar. Energy drinks are full of sugar. Then you got all these snacks. It's just more sugar. You know, even the little Tic Tacs and the little packages of gum. Sugar, sugar, sugar. Then they add sugar to, you know, all kinds of, you know, like baked beans and, you know, stuff like that. It's all sugar. They add sugar to it. So, here you are. Why would you be eating that stuff? Do you think our ancestors, you go back 100,000 years, 200,000 years... Were our ancestors eating that? Were they eating all that sugar? Well, of course not. They were eating primarily meat, especially if they were, you know, like northern European climates. They were eating meat. You know, like, what do you think the Vikings ate? Think they were, you know, that was a cold climate. You know, with a very short growing season, they were eating meat. That was heavy on fats. So you have this idea that, oh, well, we'll eat all these carbohydrates and try to have low fat, and, you know, protein and low fat and, you know, high carbohydrates. And what has happened? People have high cholesterol. Cholesterol's through the roof, and then they come up with all the, oh, well, we'll compensate for that. Well, you just take this Zocor, just take this Crestor, these so-called statin drugs. You know, there's almost this aura that if you take those, you're just heart attack proof. But the fact is that those don't even, you actually research that, and those don't even do what they say. They say, oh, well, you have a 33% chance, yeah, better chance of not having a heart attack if you, you know, you take, the, you know, whatever it is, if either Zocor or Crestor, you know, and then, but down in the fine print, in the real study, if you look at the raw data, and they even put it in some of the ads, it was actually only 1%. You know, all of the people that were in the trial that took that, there was a 1% difference between the people that all, you know, the people that had heart attacks that, you know, that would die of a heart attack during the study. There was a 1% difference between the people that were taking the statin drug and that weren't taking it in this sort of, a, you know, kind of a randomized study. 1%. Now, if you realized that, if that was a number that they publicized in, you know, giant font, do you think, would you be tempted to take that? It was going to help you by 1%? That's negligible. That's within a margin of error if you're, you know, within a 3% margin of error if you're, like it for voting purposes or polling purposes. 1% is pretty minuscule. That's not worth it. So they were able to kind of do a trick with the statistics and make it seem like that, oh, it was a 33% jump. You know, and then that makes people, you know, think, oh, I can eat whatever, you know, I can just keep doing what I'm doing and, you know, keep eating my crappy, sad American diet, standard American diet, keep eating all the crap and, but no problem, I'll just take this statin drug and I'll be fine. But beyond that, you know, so what we're doing with this American diet, we've loaded up on all of the pasta, all of the bread, all of these sweets, sugars, you know, cakes, cookies, pies, candies, snacks, junk food, potato chips, whatever else. you know, telling ourselves, oh, we're eating healthy. We're, you know, fruit, you know, even fruit like bananas. They've been kind of messed with. You know, even something like a banana, you know, that's not what bananas that we have that we're familiar with today, that's not what they started out as. That's what they've kind of bred them into, you know, where they're this, you know, sort of this big, sugar-rich, tasty fruit. You know, and there's this myth that, oh, you have to eat your banana to get your potassium. Well, you can get potassium, a lot more potassium from other, you know, certain vegetables, no problem. So, people are eating way too much sugar. Now, some people can, you know, probably depending on your genetics, you can tolerate that. Some people can tolerate it better than others. But what has happened, and what's increasingly happening, is that over a long period of time, people are sort of putting this, you know, all of the sugar, which is, it's really a poison. Just think of it as a slow poison. Putting this slow acting poison, or, you know, this every day, day in, day out, adding this poison into their diet. I've been doing it my entire life. If you ever drink milk, milk is, you know, what's milk got in it? It's got, maybe if it's a whole milk, it's got some fats in it. But what else does it have? It has sugar in it. Lactose is sugar. Now that's great if you're a little baby, you know, and you're born and your mother nurses you, then, you know, that milk is there to fatten you up as soon as possible. You know, the cow's milk that we all, you know, that we're all familiar with, at least in the U.S., you buy in the store. You know, the cow, the mother has the baby cow, and, you know, a couple of months later, that thing's huge. You know, and it's because, sure, that's a great, you know, it fattens you up. If you want to get fat, you know, drink milk. Especially if you drink skim milk, because then they take the fat, they've taken the fat out of it, and then all that's left is mostly the sugar. The lactose. And it tastes like water, you know, it's watered down. So, you know, there's sugar, you know, there's just sugar is insidious. Of course, the advertise, oh, this is good for you. Got milk? Remember that, those ads? You know, and you had all these famous people on the billboards with a, you know, sort of a milk mustache. You know, promoting that, it was so healthy. So we all have been, you know, you eat sugar and you eat sugar and you eat sugar. And what your body does in response, and this is not our natural diet, what our body does in response, you eat sugar, your body immediately produces insulin in order to keep that sugar out of your blood. You know, because your body is going to, in a normal body, your body chemistry, your body is going to try to keep the sugar level between, I think it's like, you know, around 100, you know, like 80, you know, like between 80 and 100, or maybe even 110. Now, if it gets up to like 140, that's high. But, you know, in a normal functioning body, your body's going to really try to keep it around 100, anywhere from 80 to 100. So, you know, in the units that they use to measure it in the blood. So, you eat the sugar, you eat the candy bar, you eat whatever, and your body produces extra insulin in order to, and the insulin is there to sort of force the sugar, the excess sugar, because your body can burn some of it. You know, your cells can actually use sugar they can use some of it. However, then if there's extra, then it forces it, the insulin sort of gets it to go into the fat cells. You know, insulin is a hormone. It's got a number of different functions, but one of its functions is to get the sugar to go into the fat cells. But at some point, those fat cells, because you do this over a long period of time, you know, decades, keep doing it, depending on how much sugar you've eaten, and over all that time, day in and day out, at some point, the fat cells won't accept it, you know, even though the insulin's sort of knocking on the door and saying, hey, I've got this sugar, you got to take it, I want you to take it. And, the fat cells say, nope, sorry, we've got enough, don't want it. And at that point, that's called insulin resistance. It begins to build up in your blood, the sugar, and then that's dangerous. That causes all kinds, you have a blood sugar level of 140, it is actually doing serious, irreparable damage to the little tiny capillaries that supply the retinas of your eyes and in your toes and your extremities, all over your body. Damage is being done if the sugar is at 140. That's bad. So one of the remedies, and they put people, the doctor says we'll put you on metformin. And then the metformin sort of assists, because your pancreas is still producing insulin, probably massive amounts of insulin. So then the metformin sort of assists the insulin that your body's producing, the extra insulin. It's assisting that insulin into getting the fat cells to go ahead and accept the excess sugar and store it as energy. So sugar really is not a natural, carbohydrates really aren't a natural thing that we should be eating. It's not healthy. You can eat a little bit of it, but not what we've done with it. We've perverted it. And it didn't just happen. It's been going on for a long time, but of course, over time, it's gotten much worse now, to the point where you have children with type 2 diabetes. It used to be called onset type 2 diabetes, or adult onset diabetes. Because it was mostly adults that would get type 2 diabetes, but now it's there's also children. And the problem is, and then they think that they'll also tell you, well, if you just take your all of these different medications we give you, your diabetic medications, and keep your sugar level in check, that's gonna mitigate all the damage. Sorry, it doesn't. All kinds of damage is being done to various parts of your body. You know, it's really insidious, and then they may start, chopping off limbs. Cutting this off or cutting that off because it's got gangrene. It's very serious. Type 2 diabetes is very, very serious. And you don't want to get it. So, now, I've never had it. I don't go to the doctor very often. I just go every couple of years and get a checkup, or not really a checkup, but a driver physical. It's not really a checkup, a driver physical. And, that's sort of a cursory exam to make sure that I'm not about to drop dead. And, it doesn't really... It, it wouldn't, you know, that type of thing wouldn't catch a problem if it was sort of in, kind of in the development stage, because it could be, you know, the type 2 diabetes doesn't just suddenly happen. It may brew, the problem will brew for decades before the sort of the insulin resistance symptoms present themselves. So the type 2 diabetes is kind of reversible, and you can do that with the diet. So there's this ketogenic diet. So the idea is that you eat, you know, you cut out all of the, you know, just as many of the carbohydrates as possible, especially the pastas and the cakes and the cookies and the rice and the potatoes and, you know, all of that. Cut it out. And so for about the past week, I've started doing that. And so far, so good. Two things I've noticed. I'm not feeling, you know, kind of tired in the daytime. Because once in a while, I would go through this thing where I'd be sort of tired in the afternoon, or sort, you know, go through a little, you know, the thing where I'm kind of drowsy a little bit and I still have to drive. You know, that's terrible. I hate that. That I haven't had, you know, since I've been cutting out all the carbohydrates, that has completely not happened. And the other thing that I noticed immediately is that I'm no longer reaching for my antacid tablets. No more indigestion. It's gone. And so I eat twice a day, and it's still very easy. You think, well, how can you, you know, because one of the objections, you know, is how could I eat a ketogenic diet while I'm traveling? Well, it's not that hard. For example, this evening, this truck stop that I stopped at that I was talking about earlier, they have a Popeyes and a Taco Bell, and then they've, what's the other, Fazoli's, which is a pasta, you know, kind of a type place. So I walked in there, pulled up on the fuel island, parked in front of the fuel island, and went inside to the Popeyes. And I ordered, a two-piece thing. So it's two pieces of chicken, and then the side was green beans. And so, and then the drinks, unsweet iced tea. So there might, there may or may not be a little bit of carbohydrates in the, if the, you know, like the chicken, you know, whatever they batter the chicken with, I don't know. Sure, there's probably a little carbohydrate in that, probably not a whole lot. And then the chicken's pretty much, you know, going to be fat and, you know, protein. And then you may have some limited carbohydrates in the green beans. But the, you know, green beans aren't particularly starchy, you know, they're, you know, so some vegetables are more starchy, you know, like carrots, for example, are a lot more starchy than other, you know, carrots, corn would be another one that's really starchy. That corn you probably want to avoid because it's just really starchy, especially creamed corn, because then they add extra sugar to it. Tastes good. Cream corn's great. Tastes great, but it's not so much. not so healthy. So, what, you know, if you cut out all of the carbohydrates that you can, you know, and so what I'm doing, I'm eating meats, you know, either beef or pork or fish or chicken, whatever, any meat's fine. And make sure that there's plenty of fat in there. Fat is actually good. It's not bad. It's, you know, the idea is, has always been, we've been preached at for years, that if you eat fat, that's what causes high cholesterol. It's not. It's actually the opposite. What causes high cholesterol is high carbohydrates. You know, your body is compensating when eat high carbohydrates. Your body, you know, is making more insulin to try to compensate for those carbohydrates, and then that ends up messing up the other mechanisms, and you end up with high cholesterol. And then your body, it ends up messing the cholesterol up to the point where it causes problems. Then it does block your arteries, etc. But it's not because of what you ate. It's because of what, you didn't eat the fats. It's because of what you, it is what you ate. You ate the carbohydrates, and the carbohydrates started the chain reaction, the negative chain reaction. So if you get rid of the carbohydrates as much as possible, and then you still have a certain amount of proteins. You don't want to overdo the proteins, but you have a certain level of proteins, and then fats, plenty of fats. Then that causes your blood cholesterol to actually go down, and then it sort of becomes a much more manageable situation. Your body will actually begin to burn, instead of storing fat, it begins to actually burn fat. So the idea is you want to keep your blood glucose level and the insulin level as low as possible, sort of a low normal. Keep those as normal and as low as possible all the time. And your body is able to sort of live on fats. And it actually then, instead of storing fat, then it actually can begin to burn the fat that you actually, that, you know, that it had stored. You know, you don't grow new fat cells. You know, when you're, I don't know what age, but at some age, let's just pick an age, let's say by the time you're 2 years old, you have probably pretty much all the fat cells you're ever going to have your entire life. You know, the difference is that they have the ability to get bigger as they store more energy. And and we think of it as fat. So you can actually use the energy out of those cells, and those cells can kind of shrink down. But if you go back, 100,000, 200,000 years ago, or even 40,000 years ago, people would, they had, times of feast and times of famine. And so most of the time they were probably eating meat. But then whenever things got good and there were fruits or whatever, and sort of a limited, the end of the summer season, and they could eat, maybe gain 5 or 10 pounds, and then they were ready for winter. And so then it gave them a little bit more of an advantage whenever the winter comes and there's not as much to eat, perhaps. And then they've got a little advantage because then they can live on the fat for a little while if they have to, that's stored. But what we're doing today, and we have been for the last at least 50 to 60 years, is with the recommended American diet is we've been just, let's eat carbohydrates. Get away from those fats. Fats are bad. Let's just eat the carbohydrates, and you end up with an incredible amount. How many people are obese? And it's not just an American problem, you know, because countries around the world have tended to adopt the Western diet. And so it's not just the United States. You know, there's an obesity epidemic in, you know, a lot of different countries now, where people are, they're eating all these carbohydrates, not enough fats. They're getting fatter and fatter and fatter, and then, you know, they end up with all this type 2 diabetes. And that's a, as I say, that's a really dangerous thing to have. You don't want to have that. So even if you do have it, you can go on a, you know, cut out the carbohydrates, go on a kind of a ketogenic diet. You know, and if you're already taking metformin, then you need to do it in conjunction with your doctor, so that, you know, because you're going to pretty quickly with type 2 diabetes, pretty quickly you're going to have to, if you cut out the carbohydrates, pretty quickly you're going to have to cut down the prescription for the metformin, and at some point possibly eliminate it. Because then, it, you know, that could end up forcing low blood sugar, which that can be dangerous. You know, that can cause you to die. You go into a coma and you die. But there's a lot of people that will that are type 2 diabetics, and they're taking their metformin or whatever. There's a bunch of other drugs they can take that are probably do similar things that the metformin does. And then they'll eat and they'll think, oh, well, I'll just have this extra snack and I'll just take a little bit more medication to compensate for it. And in the meantime, they're doing irreparable damage to their body organs that can't be reversed. You know, so, in any case, I'm all of that to say I have, for about the last week, I've been on a, you know, kind of cut out the carbohydrates, and it's working so far so good. I'm not craving anything. Not, you know, I'm not really feeling, you know, I never really have felt ravenously hungry. That's been pretty rare. You know, for the long time now, I'll eat twice a day, sometimes more than that, but, you know, usually it's been twice a day that I eat. And I haven't been one to really snack out of vending machines. And so now I've cut all of that off, but, you know, like when I ate this evening at this, got the stuff at the Popeyes, the other thing I told them, no roll. I don't want the biscuit that comes with it, you know, no biscuit. Early lunch I had this morning, it was like a hamburger patty, basically, and it was a breakfast thing. It was on the breakfast menu. Hamburger patty, you know, ground beef patty, and then two, you know, there were three eggs. And so I told him, I'm doing this low carb thing, no bread, no hash browns. I just want the meat and the eggs, and so that's what I got, and it was good. And I don't miss the carbohydrates. It's not something that I have to have. So, but that, you know, it is insane. If you have type 2 diabetes and your doctor says, well, oh, you should, here's the diet, you know, they recommend the American Diabetic Association diet, here's the diet, you know, and they're telling you to eat all these carbohydrates that are turning into sugar as soon as you eat it, it turns into sugar, your body metabolizes it into sugar. That is insane. Because you have high, you know, you've got a high sugar problem anyway, that's causing high insulin, that's morphed into insulin resistance, caused you to be fat. Then you have this insulin resistance, and then they tell you, oh, you need to lose weight. And yet they're feeding, they might as well be feeding you sugar cubes. Now what, that's insane. Why would you eat sugar if you've got a sugar problem? Why would you eat sugar if that drives up your insulin and causes your insulin resistance to get worse? Why would you do that? It's just utterly insane. You know, people with type 2 diabetes end up with, of increased risk of heart attack, dementia, all kinds. You know, there's a whole list of things that go along with that that are really bad. So, I decided that, it was time, that was enough to, my brother telling me that he's taking the metformin, and he, as I say, he's 5.5 years younger than I am. Just that alone, and then watching those videos, was enough to convince me, hey, I better take the bull by the horns. I've never had a problem that I know of. I do have fat around the middle, and the fat, it really doesn't go away. So I know I have that, at least that much of a problem. I do have a fat, fat around the middle. So I do have that problem. So I've got some fat storage that doesn't need to be there. So I have at least that part of the problem. So I've decided I want to, what's the point of eating this poison? It is poison. I don't care how good it tastes or if it, people try to equate food with love, and something tasting good or, mommy made it for me or whatever, grandma's pies or whatever. It's poison. Stop it. It's insane. Our bodies weren't designed to eat the modern diet. And what the authorities tell you is actually the opposite of what it should be. Cut out all of the fruits and the cakes and the cookies and the candies and the potatoes and the pasta and the bread and the juices. Eat meats, and especially fatty meats. Make sure you're getting enough fat. So sometimes the popular thing, the conventional wisdom, or what's presented as a conventional wisdom, especially when it comes to food, is wrong. Utterly wrong. It's killing you. 52% of Americans either have type 2 diabetes or so-called pre-diabetes, insulin resistance. They're heading right into diabetes, type 2 diabetes. And that's expected to go up and up and up. There's been plenty of people on the ketogenic type of diet that have reversed type 2 diabetes to the point, plenty of them are off of their medication and they no longer have a problem. Now, of course, if, some damage has been done to blood vessels, maybe not enough to notice it, but if your blood sugar gets if it gets up to 140 or beyond, irreparable damage is being done. You know, so it's not such a great idea if you're, you know, especially if you, you know, you've been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, you know, every, you know, and you think, oh, I'm going to have my 12-ounce bottle of, or, you know, can of soda, you're damaging your body drinking that crap. Or, oh, here, I'm going to have my so-called healthy apple or healthy orange, my healthy fruit, cup of fruit. Or my healthy bread snack. You're damaging your body. And the damage is irreparable. It can't be, your body can't repair it. You know, so, you know, it's up to you. To be able to see these things for yourself and not just, oh, the authority said so, or this is the official line, so therefore I can just, I'm okay, I can do whatever, you know, whatever the group tells me to do is fine. You can't, you know, you do that and you go right off the cliff with the rest of the lemmings. So anyway, I have a voice file from Joel that I'm going to play. I don't know exactly what he's talking about, but here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. Joel McLaughlin here. Here, let me make sure this is going to work. Okay. I'm using a headset, a little different headset than I was before. Anyway, Joel McLaughlin here. Kind of going back towards your last podcast, you're talking about doctors and the Indian guy that had gotten bariatric surgery. And this world has kind of gotten away from what used to be some common sense. Good example of this. I went to my sister-in-law's for Thanksgiving, and like right before we're ready to head out the door, wife got a text message from her sister that our nephew was vomiting, and he was, you know, 4, you know, typical you know, virus that's going around. Okay. He had vomited maybe twice before we got there. I don't remember. He did eat a little bit at Thanksgiving dinner. We decided just to go anyway. So we didn't have anywhere else to go. We figured, why not? You know, none of us got sick. So I'm not 100% sure why he was vomiting. But one of the things that... and I didn't say nothing just because, you know, it's her kid. She can do what she wants. It's her kid, her money, her wallet, whatever. So, she had called her pediatrician's on-call person and had them call in a prescription. I think she had asked for Zofran anti-nausea medicine. Probably, and that's probably one of the ones that she has used herself, because she actually had, in this pregnancy, she had something where basically most women will get morning sickness and it only lasts for, you know, like a month or so maybe, and then that'll be it. She had it all the time, and it wasn't just in the morning, it was all the time. She was really sick when she was pregnant with her youngest son, probably her last son. And so they gave her a prescription for Zofran so that she can actually hold things down, because, you know, she was just not able to hold much down. But to me, I would have been like, just give him fluids. You know, he's going to vomit for a while. You know, maybe give him some Pepto-Bismol or something like that, you know, but that's it. And she will take this child, like if he has the sniffles for more than a couple of days, she'll take him to the doctor. And I'm like, it's cold. It's going to have to run its course. It's not anything that you can take a antibiotic for. You know, that's kind of the way we dealt with my son. And he's fine. You know, he's 19, going to be 20 soon. So it's like, what do we do? You know, that's what this thing, the things I've done with my son is the things that that my mother did with myself. And, I don't think it's called resentment or driven by resentment at all. I think it's just the mentality of the snowflake where everyone wants their safe space. You know, people think, oh, no child should have to vomit. They're human. They're going to vomit at some point. They're human. They're going to have diarrhea at some point. It's only if it gets to be severe, you know, or other combined with other symptoms that you actually have to do anything about that kind of thing. And that's the whole thing of it. You know, that just surprises me with some people. It just, they have this mentality that, well, no one should have to live with this. No one should have to live without healthcare. Truth is healthcare is used and abused, and that's part of the reason why healthcare is so ding-dang and expensive. All right? Now, I won't say that you shouldn't take drugs for blood pressure. Or my wife's case has a narcolepsy. So she takes a drug called Nuvigil for that. All right. It works. You know, it's without it, she's a different person. Now her kind of narcolepsy isn't so much that she actually would fall asleep just like at the drop of a hat. Hers is the kind of narcolepsy whereas no matter how much sleep she would get, even with her CPAP machine operating at 100% efficiency, she would just always feel tired. So that was her kind of our narcolepsy, and they did a little bit different kind of test. With as much as medicine that, you know, as we know, as they know, there's lots of things they don't know. They don't know the 100% operation of the brain. They don't know why people, and there is such a thing as sexual dysphoria, which is what drives a lot of the trans sexual community, where what drives people to want to mutilate their bodies because their brain's telling them, even though they're XY chromosome, they have XY and chromosomes, and they are male, their brain is for some dumb reason telling them that they're actually female. No one really knows why that happens. And that is a, like less than a percent of the country, and people are trying to treat them just like they would treat a black person who's not less than 1% of the country, you know? And that's kind of the insanity of the left. And with the bannings of certain people on Twitter for just whatever they say, you know, it's insanity. It's complete insanity. Well, you didn't use the right pronouns. You know, you should be kicked off Twitter. Well, wait a minute. It's Twitter. It's mostly text. How am I supposed to know what sex you are presenting? I've seen some guys' pictures that look like women that use the he pronoun. Okay? You know, so what's that supposed to mean? How are you supposed to tell? Some, you know, unless they specifically spell it out, most of them usually do, in their Twitter profile, how are you supposed to tell if they're trans or not? You know, it's, sexual dysphoria is not it's a psychological thing, as are a lot of these things, you know. I'm convinced autism and autism-related things like Asperger's, like my son has, I think the reason why I never had a problem with it is because we had the classroom, because I think I probably had it. I'm not going to go to get diagnosed or anything, but I think I probably had it. And I think the reason I got by with it is how they set up the classrooms now. Once you get to be a certain level of K through 12, doesn't matter whether you're a private school or a public school, the focus is on passing the test, not teaching people the actual things they need to know to pass the test. So they can pass the test, but then if you ask them to actually use the knowledge, they can't do it. That's one. And then at a certain point, they kept the, like in kindergarten, the rooms are pretty much the same as I remember. You know, they're open, lots of story time and words and stuff like that. And there wasn't any actual set rows of desks or anything like that until I got to first grade. And we had rows of desks and we were all facing forward. We were facing the teacher. We couldn't pay attention to anything but the teacher in the back of the students and the students' heads in front of us. And when my son went to first grade and all the way up through fifth, maybe sixth, I don't remember sixth all that much. That was a long time ago with him. But they were arranged in kind of like a lot of the open offices are, where there's a bunch of desks in a circle. And there's different groups of circles, and this persisted from first grade through, like I said, at least sixth, maybe seventh. It wasn't until about seventh or eighth that the rows of desks like I was used to from first through 12 appeared. So it is just a different kind of arrangement. And I think that's why I never had a problem with it. And I think that's part of the problem that we're dealing with today.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. I think, you know, one of the big problems is probably that a lot of people seem to have a tendency, and it's kind of just what I was talking about. People seem to have a tendency to just kind of go along with whatever the authority says. Whatever the government says or the doctor says, or people are trained to take the kid to the doctor, or this is what we do. And then a lot of the doctors, of course, are trained to, if these symptoms present, then you write the prescription for these tablets or, this medication or that medication. And the problem is that that type of thinking, it's a mechanical type of thinking. It's really not that effective. It's almost like a programmed behavior. People aren't thinking. There's no real thinking going on. It's just, sort of a mechanical, knee-jerk, sort of a hysterical, in some cases, reaction that people have to various situations. So, and I think to one extent or another, we're all sort of prone to do that, depending. We're all sort of susceptible to that kind of behavior. But I don't know. I like to, I like to think about things. I like to consider things. Going to the doctor, is that a sort of an appropriate behavior? Sometimes it is, sometimes it's necessary. Should you always just mindlessly do whatever the doctor, a doctor in particular, tells you? No, you shouldn't. At best, a doctor is a used car mechanic. You know, some of them are good and some of them are bad. Some of them, and they have good days, and they have, the best of them have good days and bad days, and the worst of them have good days and bad days. You know, they're practicing medicine. Why do you think they call it a practice? It's because they are literally practicing. So, but on the other hand, I'm not a mother, and I never have been a mother, never have, never will be. So I'm sure, you know, for a mother, and the kids vomiting is probably very distressing. You know, so mothers are going to do what they do. But, you know, so it's hard to say, you know, the kid may have, since it was Thanksgiving, you know, no telling what the kid ate. Probably too many sweets. That was kind of what I was just talking about. You know, and that can cause problems. I remember vomiting when I was a kid. You know, I remember one time, and I would have been pretty young. I don't know what age I was, but it was, you know, it was a very early memory. But I loved when my mom would make spaghetti. Just love it. And I would just, I remember a period of time where I would just go crazy eating it. Just eat as much as I possibly could of it. And I remember, you know, and I was a kid. I was still in the single digits. I don't remember how old I was at this point, but whenever it happened. But I distinctly remember over, you know, kind of eating, you know, just going crazy, eating as much of it as I could, to the point where I actually threw up. So probably what happened, I guess it would be with your nephew, since it was Thanksgiving, he probably, is my guess, probably ate too much of something. You know, something, you know, didn't agree, and the bodies can be very good about ejecting, you know, stuff that it doesn't want sometimes. And so that's very possibly what happened. So, but mothers will do what they do, and, you know, who's to say that, you know, the kid would have probably been fine had she not taken him to the doctor, but on the other hand, you know, that was what, she, you know, she kind of did anyway, so. And, you know, and somebody pointing at, you know, kind of criticizing her or whatever is probably not going to change. She'll probably do the same thing again at some other point. So, but, so I don't know. I think it's a good idea to question things. You know, at least for myself. For example, you know, my younger brother. You know, you can bet when I see him again, I'm going to talk to him, you know, kind of what, it, you know, his situation has caused me to modify my own behavior. You know, deciding to end up going on, you know, kind of getting rid of the carbohydrates. And this isn't, I'm not doing it for diet purposes. I don't need to really lose weight. I've weighed 185 pounds for, that's been pretty consistent for a number of years. So I don't really feel, you know, even though I have fat around my belly, that I really don't feel the need that I really need to lose weight. I'm not worried about that. But I do not want to progress into type 2 diabetes, you know, insulin resistance, and where I have to take medication. And of course, that can all, that these things also cause high blood pressure. You know, so if you go on a ketogenic diet, chances are not only is it gonna, it's certainly gonna lower your blood sugar and your insulin levels. And it's certainly, if you really go on a ketogenic diet, meaning that it's very, like a really low-carb diet and high, kind of certain amount of protein, high-fat diet, you're going to end up lowering. If you have a blood pressure problem, it's going to lower. Then there's a lot of other effects that people have. The positive effects, problems disappear that they didn't really realize were problems. So you can bet I'm going to tell him about it. I'll tell the youngest one about it too. His youngest brother's wife is, I'm sure she's pre-diabetic. Her mother had it. Had type 2, kind of bad case of type 2 diabetes. So, and then the other problem, if you've got, excess weight, statistically, you got excess weight and you got type 2 diabetes, not only are you much more likely to end up with a heart attack, but you're, you're more likely to end up with dementia, but you're also more likely to end up with cancer. Kind of nipping all of that in the bud by altering your diet. If you can alter your diet and sort of nip all those problems in the bud, why would you not do that? So I'm going to talk to my younger brother and tell him about it. And then it's up to him if he wants to do something about it. It's up to him. I'm not going to really preach to him or try to tell him what he has to do. It's his health, it's his life, it's his existence. If he wants to eat the carbohydrates, I'm not going to stop him, and I'm not going to preach at him. But I will tell him that the result of what he told me, the experience he's having with kind of going into a type 2 diabetic situation, that has caused me to modify my own behavior. And this is I'm looking at this as a permanent modification, permanently no more carbohydrates. Cut as many of them out as possible, because they're really are poison. Why would you eat poison? Why would you eat something that is causing damage, kind of slow incremental damage to your body? Why would you do that? I don't care how good it tastes. I'm sure cocaine feels good too. I'm sure the people that, as they take the cocaine, they probably feel great. There are the people that are doing methamphetamines. I'm sure they feel wonderful while they're doing it. Briefly. But I'll tell him what I'm doing. But then it's up to him if he wants to do. If he wants to take extra steps, then that's all up to him. So. And with me being on this low, kind of changing my diet to a kind of a ketogenic sort of low carb method of eating, or really a lifestyle, I should be getting rid of the fat around my middle, that's been with me, for years and years and years. So I was overweight as a kid. I don't remember when I got up to, I think the worst was whenever I got up to age 13, and I was still growing at that, becoming taller at that point. But I don't remember how, I was pretty fat. I was an obese child. When I was 4 months old, I weighed 25 pounds. So I was obese pretty much my entire childhood. And then whenever I became a teenager, started working and kind of got away from the food a little bit, and the problem of being really obese kind of rectified itself. But I never have been able to kind of get rid of the fat around the middle. That's always kind of stuck with me. But I do believe it's possible to get rid of it. But not as long as you're sort of in the mode of getting most of your energy from carbohydrates, you're never going to get rid of the fat. If you got stored fat, it's just going to stay. So really, the only way to get rid of it, to kind of shrink those fat cells back down, is to use the energy out of them. And if you switch your body chemistry from, using mostly glucose to using so-called ketones, the sort of use the fat energy, your body's just perfectly happy. It's happier using fat energy than it is glucose energy. Your body has sort of a dual fuel system. If you can switch that and kind of keep it in, in the ketogenic side, where it's using sort of the ketogenic energy as opposed to the glucose energy. The ketones are sort of the primary energy source. Then, your body doesn't store fat. It uses, it doesn't really need to. Because then from the body standpoint, as long as it's got plenty of fats and it's got its protein and its fats, then there's no famine. Why would you store? You don't need to store anything. So I'll tell him about it, but then it's up to him to do something with it. I hope that I would hope that he'd be able to, reverse his and get off of the metformin. Kind of get rid of the need for to have to take it, because I hate to, you don't. Type 2 diabetes is bad. I know this guy that he's probably, I think he's about my age. He might be a couple of years older, and the guy's not. He's not overweight. Seems like a really nice, sharp guy. He works. But all of a sudden, I didn't see, because I only might see him like once every month or two. And all of a sudden he showed up on crutches. And one of his legs is amputated just below the knee. Yeah, what happened? Well, he woke up one morning and his foot was black. One of his feet was black. Gangrene. And this guy really tries to manage his diabetes well, using, the conventional means. Probably still eating lots of carbohydrates. And taking his medication. And he still has ended up with losing part of his leg. I think it was his right leg. They just amputated it right below the knee. So it's a serious thing. It's a very serious disease. It's nothing to mess with. So, but some people, they'll just kind of, the doctors will just sort of tell you, whatever the group think is. That you have some doctors that realize what it is and that it can be reversed, and you could go on this ketogenic diet and it really will help you. And then you have the other ones that are no, you're going to die of a heart attack. You may lose weight, but you're going to die of a heart attack. It's going to, you eat all those fats and it's going to raise your cholesterol through the roof and you're going to die of a heart attack. And it's exactly the opposite. Because what causes your cholesterol to go and to really become a problem is too many carbohydrates. That's the problem. Because your body makes cholesterol. Your body manufactures it. What do you think your brain's made out of? Your brain is almost all fat. Your nervous system is, you know, almost all fat. It's cholesterol. Neurotransmitters work on fat. You know, you have essential levels of fat. You have essential levels of protein. You know, you have, if you don't have certain fats, you know, at some point you'll die. At some point, if you don't have enough protein, you're going to die. But there is no such thing as in the human body as an essential carbohydrate. You can live completely without carbohydrates. There are people on this so-called carnivore diet that's strictly meat and meat alone, zero carbohydrates, and people have lived on that for decades and they're doing fine. Jordan Peterson, for at least the last 6 months, has lived on a diet of only beef. He eats beef, he drinks water, and he eats salt, and that's it. That's his diet. And he's had a number of health improvements. He lost about 50 pounds. He's had some autoimmune diseases that the symptoms are gone. He's doing great. Now, would I do that kind of a diet? I don't know. I might experiment with it at some point, but really no need to at this point. But you can, and you say, well, how's he getting vitamin C? Well, you get that out of the beef. Beef and meat, various kinds of meat, it turns out, or especially beef, is full of vitamins. So as long as you have fresh beef, for example, you're not going to get scurvy. There's going to be enough vitamin C in that to keep you, it's going to prevent you from getting scurvy. And of course, you could always supplement. But we don't need carbohydrates. And the other thing, it's interesting, let's say you have a big steak, or let's say you've got a couple of steaks, or you've got a pile of steaks, and you can just eat as much steak as you want. At some point, you eat the first big piece of steak, like a big T-bone, and then you have another one. At some point, your brain is going to send us, your brain sends a signal, that's it, can't eat anymore. And it shuts you off, and you just can't bring yourself to eat anymore. But if you got your big bag of Doritos, before you know it, you've eaten the whole damn bag, and you could eat another one, and there's no signal that says, hey, that's it, no more Doritos. You'll eat the whole damn thing. Go to a Mexican restaurant and they bring you the bowl of chips and the salsa. If you don't watch it, you'll eat the whole thing. Just sit there and eat the whole thing. And there's no shut off. So, anyway, probably better be cutting this off. Hope everyone has had a great weekend. Hope you have a great week coming up. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.